All right. Our next case on calendar is docket number 66343, Terrazas versus State. Counsel, are we ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Yeah, oh, certainly.
May I begin?
Yes.
May it please the Court, my name is Seth Resko, and I represent the appellant, Carlos Terrazas. Your Honor, the main issue I'm presenting before this Court is whether at a probation revocation hearing, the district court judge is required to submit written findings or if oral findings are authorized, and if oral findings are authorized, whether such findings must identify the violation and the evidence used to support that violation.
Were most of the issues admitted to violations, or quite a few of them were admitted?
Your Honor, the transcript revealed the following. Mr. Terrazas' counsel explained to the court that he contested the violations. He admitted to the facts, but contested to the violations. Thereafter, the district court judge asked Mr. Terrazas, sir, did you violate the terms and conditions of your probation? And Mr. Terrazas answered, yes, Your Honor. But that doesn't identify which of the violations he's admitting to. He could have admitted to one. He could have admitted to multiple. There were several violations that had been charged by parole and probation. So I would explain to the court that the jurisdiction here has not authorized in any precedential decision oral findings. There is United States Supreme Court case law, Gagnon versus Scarpelli, that indicates that due process is satisfied by written statements to essentially give notice to the probationer of the violation that he violated and the reason for it. Now, the state has provided two decisions in its brief. They're not Nevada Supreme Court decisions, they're the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. In one decision, U.S. versus Daniels, the Ninth Circuit indicated that oral findings are sufficient, that did comport with due process. However, subsequently to the Daniels decision, there was the U.S. versus Sesma Hernandez. And in that decision, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals clarified that just a conclusory statement that is not sufficient, it doesn't comport with due process. There must be an identification of the violation and the evidence used to support that violation. In this case, it was the district court judge who essentially stated, when she was asked what was the reason for the revocation, and she stated, he violated the terms and conditions imposed by the court. It's my position that none of the violations were the basis for revoking his probation. In fact, when we look at the transcript of the judge, it was essentially she had heard both parties, and she set forth to the state, what would you like me to do? And before the state answered, the district court judge indicated, is it because he's not supervisable? And I would submit that not being supervisable was not a basis to revoke his probation. That was what was indicated by the state. The probation officer and the district attorney indicated, yes, he's not supervisable. Your Honor, I would go to the specific violations themselves. Let me backtrack. One, I would make a point that just being not supervisable is too vague. There is no term or condition in his code of conduct or in the terms imposed by the court that says that you must be supervisable. There has to be an actual violation. And so I'd ask the court, when I am looking at the violations, to consider that there were two types of violations at issue here. There were new violations and there were old violations based on the probation violation report.
Counsel, but what are we to do with the fact that he openly says, I stipulate to the violations?
Okay, Your Honor.
I know it's a faint point, but he's agreeing, I did things wrong. And he's not contesting that. So he's saying, okay, the only thing we're going to argue about today is what should happen to me. And you know, we're looking, we don't, we haven't necessarily adopted, but the conclusory statement rule. So how do we handle this? I mean, is this, if we say it's error, is this harmless error?
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that while Mr. Tervazas indicated that he did violate the terms, his attorney didn't make such admission. In fact, it was his attorney who stated on the record that there were no new violations.
And there was a colloquy between the state and there was a colloquy between P&P, but again, the court asked the defendant. He is the party who's charged. He's the person to do that. It wasn't his attorney, so we can move the attorney over to the side as to that issue. Did he or did he not say?
Your Honor, if, now, when you look at the violations, we have no use of alcohol. He admitted that he had drank alcohol when he was released from jail 2.5 years ago. He had an alcoholic beverage, was the language. He had admitted that he traveled out of the state through helicopter, it was like Grand Canyon tour, and that the helicopter landed in Arizona. Well, when the judge was notified of that, she said, well, you know what, I'm not impressed with that. That's not an issue. In fact, what the judge said is, this is a really strange violation report. We're dealing with activities in 2012, and now it's 2014. And so when being presented with that, the probation officer indicated, you know, we're just using this to paint a picture. So when we're not sure actually of what the violation was, and a conclusory statement has been established, at least at the Ninth Circuit, that does not comport with due process, because there's really no notice to the probationer of what his actual violation was, what was the reason for the violation, even though he's acknowledging that he's violated the terms. Well, he could have acknowledged, which he did at least after or before and after the polygraph examination, that he had a drink of alcohol, that he did travel out of the state. But this doesn't give him the due process notice that's required, at least set forth at the Ninth Circuit, why there are also a due process requirement for a written decision. And it also fails to give the court, the reviewing court, an opportunity to understand what was the actual violation. I think that there should be a there should be something distinguished between drinking an alcoholic beverage 2.5 years ago, traveling out of state, which the judge didn't find to be significant, and maybe possessing explicit materials or possessing electronic devices capable for accessing the internet. But I would submit to the court that those themselves also were not violations. I would ask the court to, as far as the, as I was mentioning, the newer violations, which I'm sure will be presented by the state, Mr. Tervazas had acknowledged after his polygraph examination that it became inconclusive. He was asked, sir, why do you think it was inconclusive? And it was at that time that he revealed that he had SD drives. I don't remember exactly how many he said, but he was having, he had SD drives, and there were images attached to the SD drives. He had also indicated some other information. I'll just get to that in a minute, but those really related to older activities where he changed his story from having a computer and pictures on the computer 2.5 years ago, that initially he said, I had it for 1 week and then threw it out, and then subsequently after the polygraph examination changed his story and said, no, I had it for 1 week, I put it in the garage, the computer and the pictures on the computer, and I put it in bags, and then I threw it out. But the recent activity that was before the court was these SD drives and the images. And you would expect the images to have inappropriate material. But the probation officer indicated in the hearing that those images did not violate the terms and conditions of his probation. When the probation officer asked, brought Mr. Tervazas to his home, they invoked their search clause. Mr. Tervazas cooperated, showed him where he was hiding the devices, and what was found was four SD memory drives, a thumb drive, two MP3 players, and some adapters. I would submit, as you indicated before, that Mr. Tervazas' counsel had disputed the fact that those were violations of the terms of his probation.
There was no hiding them. That was one of the findings that the court made, was he was deceptive to his probation officer.
So what I'm submitting is, being deceptive goes to the issue of being unsupervisable. That's not an actual violation. And so when we look at the terms and conditions set forth and his code of conduct, that's not explicitly stated. It leaves open the door for any subjective reason for why he's unsupervisable or deceitful. There has to be an actual violation at play here. And at least if the court had an explanation from the judge as to maybe that being the basis, that would afford proper review. But in this case, we're guessing.
Let me ask you this. Even if we weren't to adopt the Ninth Circuit rule, why wouldn't this be harmless error, this probation revocation proceeding? Why is it not harmless error under Daniels?
So as indicated before, I think summarily there weren't violations. The possession of the SD drive, the images that were revealed not to contain anything in violation of the terms of this probation, the drinking of the alcohol, that the judge really didn't consider it to be an issue. She was really concerned of what's going on right now. The SD drive, there was no proof or evidence that they actually were able to access the Internet. So is it harmless error? Well, not at all, because what was the violation? If SD drives...
What prejudice did you demonstrate as you brought this up to us?
Prejudice to Mr. Terrazas? And I'm sorry, maybe I'm saying something that's not getting understood. I think the fact that the judge is under a duty to identify a specific violation,
why this isn't harmless error.
Well, Mr. Terrazas was sentenced to 28 to 72 months. Mr. Terrazas had been in compliance with his probation.
Admitted to a bunch of things that the judge obviously found to be violative. And the other question is, there was a term that looks like it was redacted under. Can you tell me about that and why that happened?
Your Honor, I don't really have it. I will get back. The quick answer to the O is that was the record I was given. I wasn't trying to conceal any information as far as. I think it was the possession of the explicit material that O was. I think we're going to a business proprietorship that involved any explicit material. I think that was why it was, that was what O was. But I wasn't the attorney at the probation hearing, and I did not redact it myself. But what I did want to go back to, Your Honor, is what you stated, and that was, he admitted to all these violations, but I'm not saying that. I'm not admitting that at all.
Why didn't he ask for a hearing then? Why did he admit to them? In other words, why didn't he have a full-blown hearing?
Obviously there's two parts to the hearing, and he had an opportunity to contest that they were violations. They were the admission of the facts, but they're saying that the facts themselves did not amount to a violation. And, of course, if you found a violation, they didn't warrant revocation. I think... I'm not saying it because I'm making it up. The record stated that his counsel's disputed that they were violations. He was trying to express to the court that while there was an admission of the facts, there wasn't a violation. Although Mr. Terrazas himself admitted to it, there is no indication that he admitted to all of them.
Why did he let him do that?
Your Honor, I think that it's Mr. Terrazas who's being, asked a question before the court, and he volunteered the information. If you're being asked directly, the attorney may have missed that, but Mr. Terrazas was asked. It's a somewhat informal situation, whereas the probation officer is testifying, but the judge is going back and forth on questions, so it's a little bit more of an informal proceeding, so that maybe that was an issue that, only later realizing that, all right, he admitted to on the record, maybe to everything, maybe to one thing. But I guess still, that calls for the fact that the judge should be required to identify that violation that he is admitting to and the evidence that was there to support it. See, he's admitting to it, but that doesn't mean he's admitting to all of them. What was the evidence provided to show that, okay, he admitted to this. This isn't that big of a deal, but he admitted to this. Here's the evidence to show that, or no evidence. The judge could have just at least stated forth on the record, orally or in writing, why she found a particular conduct violative of the terms of probation, but that didn't happen. I think that's what I'm saying is the due process violation. There has to be something that gives him an opportunity when these issues are disputed. And I am submitting they were disputed. They were disputed on the record by her counsel. The fact that there was an admission, there may have been an admission to one, multiple, some that were really minor, and some maybe that were really significant. But we don't know that, because the record wasn't clear about that. And the judge could have set that, could have clarified for this court, of course, for the probationer, by making a record of that.
What did the judge say when she revoked the probation? What was her, what were her words?
She said specifically, because she was asked that, Your Honor, why are you revoking the probation? Well, he violated the terms and conditions of his probation. That was it. And he was found to be unsupervisable. That led to that decision.
Okay. Counsel, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Steve Owens of the Clark County DA's office, here on behalf of the respondent state of Nevada. It happens all the time in these revocation hearings where a defendant will come in and stipulate to the facts in the violation report and throw themselves on the mercy of the court and ask for something short of full revocation. The court has other alternatives at its disposal. That happens all the time, but it's something quite different when you stipulate to the facts in the violation report and then argue that they're really not violations of any specific condition of probation, and then on appeal try to back away from the stipulation and say, well, we didn't really stipulate to everything in that violation report. We only meant somewhat of a stipulation. I think that's really disingenuous. If you don't have a dispute of fact, then you stipulate. If you do, you have an evidentiary hearing. It's kind of like pleading guilty and then coming up on appeal and arguing insufficient evidence. That's what a trial is for. They didn't want their evidentiary hearing to challenge any of these facts. I think for the first time here today, I heard them make some sort of argument about due process right to notice of the violations. Well, we got a violation report, several pages long, single-spaced, that goes into great detail as to what the violations are that he was charged with. He certainly was on notice. The argument really in the briefs is initially about this written statement of facts for the judge's decision. Seems like a really odd issue in a case where they've stipulated to the facts. That's one of the main reasons why you might need, under due process, a statement of facts by the judge in writing, is if there was an evidentiary hearing and the judge had to decide and weigh evidence to determine witness credibility. They forewent that. That's one of the main reasons that you would even need to put it in writing. We've got it in writing because they stipulated to the violation report. It's in the appendix. That is a statement of facts that's uncontested, unchallenged, established by stipulation upon which the judge could rightfully base her decision. So it seems a very odd decision to raise that it has to be in writing. The case authority that we've cited to the court, including the Ninth Circuit, even doesn't have a problem with these written decisions revoking probation. This written statement that's mentioned in Gagnon v. Scarpelli and Morrissey v. Brewer, the U.S. Supreme Court authority, every circuit other than the Eighth Circuit has said, you know what, as long as it's in the transcript, that's adequate. We don't need them to go put it in some sort of written document like you might have in a conclusion of a habeas case where it's statutorily required that they prepare written findings of fact and conclusions of law. Even here in Nevada, for parole revocation hearings, they don't require, this court does not require that be in writing and allows an oral statement on the record. So what do we have here? We got Judge Silver saying the court would agree that he's not supervisable based on what's come before the court. What came before the court was all of those facts in that entire violation report that were stipulated to. And because of his underlying, the court doesn't think he can be amenable to probation. His underlying offense was of the same variety and nature of what he's currently hiding from his probation officer. He was convicted of possessing and distributing gay child porn images and movies. The judge continues. He's sitting there hiding things from his PO, his probation officer, and there's still things. He got a huge break at sentencing, the judge says. Well, that's certainly something that the judge can consider. Was this a close call at sentencing? Was this, if it's a really close call, then, you know, it may take fewer facts to violate somebody than if it was just, well, obvious everyone's going to get probation for this sort of offense. He could have gone to prison the first time, and so the judge has the authority to keep him on a pretty tight leash and not have to reinstate him and give him multiple attempts at succeeding at probation if it was a close call in the first instance to even give him this benefit, this grace of the court to be put on probation. So he got a huge break at sentencing. So for him not to have been stellar on probation is a problem for this court based on the underlying. So I'm going to revoke him. And when pressed, Judge Silver said, for failing to comply with the conditions that the court set forth at sentencing. It's all the conditions in the sentencing agreement that go on and on. So that is an adequate record, especially where the facts are stipulated to, from which this court can discern that all of the facts taken together establish this basis for the judge to say he was no longer supervisable. He had hidden things from his probation officer. And so the transcript is sufficient. There's no due process violation in the way in which the judge ruled and reached her decision and explained her decision. As to this business about the conduct, the facts that they stipulated to not amounting to technical violations of probation, I disagree. I've got five, what I believe, very clear violations of conditions of probation. We can argue about the relative strengths and merits of each violation, but they are violations nonetheless. The first two are for alcohol and out-of-state travel. At sentencing and in his probation agreement, he was told to not consume, possess, or have under his control any alcohol. And yet, in the violation report, he admitted that he consumed an alcoholic beverage after his release from jail. Clear violation. Now, maybe that's not a big deal, and I'm not suggesting that it is, but it's a violation of that condition. They were on notice of that. They stipulated to that. That is one of many factors which Judge Silver could take into account in deciding what to do in light of what is now an established violation of probation. The out-of-state travel. The only thing he disputed in that violation report was that he had not sought pre-authorization to go to Arizona because he thought his probation officer would just reject it and would deny it. He did not stipulate to that fact, but he did stipulate to the fact that he went without permission to see the Grand Canyon and landed in Arizona and came back and didn't tell his probation officer about it for a year or two. That's a clear violation of the terms and conditions of probation for out-of-state travel. I don't know why we're arguing that no clear violations were established. Judge Silver didn't say that's not a violation, that's not a concern. She said it's a lesser concern. Judge says she's less concerned about this issue than the others that I'm going to get to in a minute. That's like the least of his issues. So obviously she didn't put a great deal of weight in the out-of-state travel, but it's wrong to say she didn't factor it in at all. She didn't consider it at all. The next one is not to possess sexually explicit material. In the violation report, it says that he possessed 12 to 15 adult pornography videos on a computer and possessed 8 to 10 print pictures of adult hardcore pornography, and that he had that computer for 6 to 8 months. That's clearly a violation. Now, we can argue about, well, he says that he was in the garage. He says he didn't access it. He also claimed at one point that he only had it for a week before he destroyed it. But the condition of probation is not to possess it. And hereby, we can talk about the relative weight of how much that carries in terms of violating, but clearly he violated probation by possessing explicit material for 6 to 8 months on a computer by his own admissions. He also admitted that he had in his possession a couple of gay pornography anime DVDs that he viewed for masturbatory enhancement while on probation, and that these DVDs depicted sexual activity. Again, explicit pornography that he was not supposed to have, and he admits that he had those for 3 or 4 months. A clear violation. We talk about the weight of it, but clearly a violation. Next one is no access to the internet, nor possessing an internet-capable of device. He was told this in the judgment of conviction and again in his probation agreement that he signed. And yet, in the violation report, he admits that he possessed a computer after his release from jail for 6 to 8 months. He, by his confession, it sat in the garage and he didn't access it. Well, that's up to the probation officer to supervise. If the probation officer doesn't know that there's a computer in there, then we're relying on him to self-supervise to make sure that he won't go get this computer and plug it into the wall. And we're relying on his admission, his claim that he did not actually do that. That undermines the whole point of supervision, which is he's already shown that he can't supervise himself, which is why he's convicted and put on probation, so a probation officer can make sure that he doesn't have access. He had access. He also admitted in the violation report that he viewed the Internet on a computer by looking over a friend's shoulder while his friend accessed the Internet on a computer. Might be somewhat trivial, maybe not, I don't know, but clearly a violation. He's not to view the Internet. Also, he claims that he viewed the Internet content on a computer with his father. Clearly a violation. Again, it may have been somewhat innocuous on its own. It may not justify a violation or a revocation of probation, but clearly a violation of a condition of probation. Finally, they claim that this not being supervisable is not really a condition of probation. It was listed in the violation report as number 5, violation of directives and conduct, which says you shall follow directives of parole and probation and your conduct shall justify the opportunity granted to you by this community supervision. Again, showing that probation is a grant of grace. It is not a right. It is not an entitlement. You have to show that you're being cooperative. I heard here that he cooperated. No, he did not. He only admitted things when they caught him. When the polygrapher confronted him and said, hey, your results here are somewhat inconclusive and tends to indicate deception. Then he comes forward with a little bit, not a full complete admission of everything that he's done, but he comes forward with some information. And he then comes after the polygraph. He comes forth with additional information. Prior to doing the search, he claims that there was just three memory sticks and a gift bag in his closet. It turns out, no, there was 4 memory or SD cards. There was 1 memory stick that he had not admitted to his probation officer. There was another SD card in the desk drawer that he had not admitted to, and there was MP3 player. And so we got him only admitting what he needs to in order to keep trying to explain discrepancies that the probation officer is observing. On those SD cards and that memory stick, he successfully hid 6,000 images from his probation officer and his counselor on a sex offense. Now, granted, there was nothing on there that was explicit sexual conduct. The SD cards were not charged as a violation of that prior condition that he was not to have any sexually explicit material, but it was charged under the directives and conduct violation because he, again, trying to self-supervise, did not give these images or let these images be known to the probation officer and actively hid them from his own family and from the probation officer and his counselor so that they could not make that determination of whether this was in violation of his probation, whether this was healthy for him in a sex offender program to continue viewing the same types of images, men with shirts off, gay pornography, a citizen in the community, perfectly legal and acceptable, but for somebody who's a sex offender, who is on strict restrictions, should not be viewing. He deprived his probation officer and sex offender counselor from saying, no, you shouldn't be looking at men without shirts and masturbating to them. That's not where we're trying to get you with this probation. So he's dragging his feet through probation. There's evidence here that he's not diving in and trying to really rehabilitate himself. It's almost like a game of catch-up. I'm going to walk right up to the line, and I might put my foot over a little bit, and if you can catch me, then you can violate me. But as long as I don't cross the line, you can't prove that I crossed the line, then you have to keep me on probation. The standard for deciding whether or not there's been a violation of a condition of probation is that your conduct simply needs to be not as good as it should have been.
Do you think that the order terminating his probation is sufficient where the judge said that thereafter a parole and probation officer provided the court with a written statement setting forth that the defendant has in the judgment of parole and probation violated the conditions of probation. The defendant appeared in court with his counsel and pursuant to a probation violation hearing slash proceeding and good cause appearing that the judgment of conviction is amended to revoke probation. You think that's good enough, especially when somebody admits to the facts?
Especially on this case where we've got a stipulation of the facts, I don't think you would need anything further. And in the vast majority of cases, you're going to have something in the transcript like we do here that elucidates the judge's rationale and reasoning why she didn't do something short of revocation. So
from what Justice Cherry just read, to me, it sounds like the judge adopted those findings, and it was a written finding by the parole and probation that there was a violation. And is there something inherently wrong with that?
I can't imagine that the law would require her to read into the record all the findings that are in that violation report and say, I now adopt these as my findings. I don't think the law would also require her to say, I explicitly adopt by use some sort of magical words to adopt it. She says, based on everything that's come before me and the violations of probation, I think it's pretty obvious, she factored into everything. She was most concerned about his hiding things continually from his probation officer and that he was not fully compliant with really counseling. How can you be compliant with counseling when you're still doing these, secreting these images from your family? And for that reason, she violated him. That's reviewable. The law doesn't require anything further. It's only required that his conduct satisfy the judge. His conduct of the probationer has not been as good as required by the conditions of probation. It's pretty low standard, and I think it was met here.
All right, counsel, thank you for the arguments. We appreciate you showing up today. This matter will stand submitted.